Luke. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed by this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified, and on the third day rise again." Then they remembered his words, and returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves. Then he went home, amazed at what had happened. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
I got to do this again. He is risen.
Is risen indeed.
I can tell you how different that feels from last year. It's still not perfect. It's still not exactly the way we want right now, but oh, this is leaps and bounds better from a year ago. In fact, it was a year ago today, at least according to the church year, when I stopped wearing shoes in worship. I know some of you've commented on that since we've been back in person, and I know it's a little weird. Pastor up here, not wearing shoes. But it was last year at Easter that did it. It was a year ago, Easter Sunday 2020, and it was the day before, actually, the Saturday before Easter Sunday of last year, I came down with a fever. This was the early days in the pandemic, if you can remember that far back. And we didn't know much. We were so very ignorant about this new virus. But one thing we did know was that if you have a fever, you don't expose other people. That's bad. And so the day before, the biggest Sunday of the year, I had to call this incredible worship crew that I have and tell them that their pastor had potentially been exposed to the virus. Turned out I hadn't, just so you know. But at the time, we didn't know that. And so none of us could gather, even the way we had been, just us in the chapel streaming from there. Even that we could not do on Easter Sunday. And what followed was one of the most frantic 12 hours, I think, of my entire life. I gave credit then, I'll give credit again to Aaron and Jenny here for staying up, I think, pretty much all night, filming music so we could have some music on Easter Sunday and getting everything set. Julia, my wife, and I, we spent Easter morning from early on setting up one of our spare rooms to look kind of worshipful and reverent, whatever that might mean, and filming all the different pieces of that service. And there you can see me recording it a year ago. Now, believe it or not, it all came together. It actually worked. In fact, some of you commented to me later on that you couldn't tell it was pre-recorded, which I thought was really impressive. I took that as quite the compliment. But in the midst of all the chaos, and please do understand just how exhausted we all are. You can't see anyone but me, but we are so tired in this. Julie snapped that picture, and if you noticed on there, I wasn't wearing shoes. Now, I just simply forgot to put them on. Right, there we go. There's barefoot right there. I just forgot to put them on. And of course, it didn't much matter. I mean, we were recording from about the waist up, so none of you could tell whether I had them on or not. It made no difference whatsoever. But it was later that week, after I had taken several naps and recovered, that I started thinking just how appropriate that actually was to not have shoes that Sunday morning. I mean, after all, when God appeared to Moses at the burning bush, God told Moses to take off his shoes. Why? Because Moses was standing on holy ground. And so was I. And so were you. What occurred to me after it was all over was that while we were miles apart last Easter morning, while we were all worshiping in our own separate homes, yet in that moment, we were still at church. Because church, it finally hit me, is not a building. It's the people, and more than that, it's the Spirit of God binding the people together. And so by the power of the Holy Spirit, we were still worshiping together that Easter Sunday. And that's why I stopped wearing shoes. Even though we went back and we were in the chapel for weeks after that, I stopped wearing shoes and I still don't, because I need that reminder in these days that while wherever we may physically be, while there even today are so many still worshiping from home, it doesn't matter. Because whenever we worship, wherever we are all still on holy ground. Church is not a building. It's people united by God's Spirit. God is still with us, and we are still worshiping together and have been this whole time. Now, it didn't feel like it that Sunday. It did not feel like worshiping together, and it didn't feel like worshiping together for weeks after that, and still even today doesn't quite feel right, but it doesn't make it any less true. And I'll probably go back to shoes when this is all over. Maybe I won't. We'll see. I bring all this up because it is a struggle we're still having today. I mean, some of this feels great. I mean, the cross with flowers, the lilies that we have, the music we get to hear. For many of us, it feels better, but still not quite there. I mean, we're told this is Easter. We're singing all the right songs. Everything looks right, at least if you're here. We're told we should be jumping for joy. But for many of us, even now, good as some things are, it's still just not there. That urge isn't there. That joy isn't quite there. It's a little like maybe when you go out for your anniversary, but your favorite restaurant's booked up. You got to go to the second favorite, right? Or when it doesn't snow on Christmas, right? The day's still special. It's still your anniversary. It's still Christmas, but it just doesn't land the same. You want it to all be right, and it just falls short. I mean, the day's still special, but just not quite the way you want. That's what last Easter felt like, and I dare say for many of you here, and especially maybe for many who still choose to be at home, that's what this Easter still feels like. I mean, if nothing else, you all still have masks on. You're still having to sit far apart. I had to forego all the hugs, and I know you did too. Right? There's still people we wish were with us that aren't, right? Makes it a little hard to jump for joy, doesn't it? See, we don't just want it to be Easter. We want it to feel like Easter, just like we want everything in life to feel like it should, and it's frustrating when it doesn't. I know. I feel it too. But it's also what the first Easter felt like. Do you know that? Have you thought of that? I mean, if you know the Easter story, some of this will sound familiar. If you go to Mark's gospel, for instance, Mark will tell you that the women who heard the news of Jesus' resurrection, the very first ones to hear about it, they fled in terror and amazement, Mark says. And they didn't say anything to anyone right away. Not quite how you saw Easter going. Now, Matthew, for his part in his gospel, tells us that most of the disciples, they didn't see Jesus till much, much later. And even then, some of them weren't sure what in the world was going on, and they even doubted Jesus was alive with him right in front of them. That's not how it was supposed to go. John, for his part, shares the story of when he and Peter ran to the empty tomb, saw the empty tomb, saw the cloth folded right there, and still didn't understand what was going on and just went home. And you heard Luke's account just now. Luke tells us that the women heard and believed, and they ran and told the disciples what happened, only for the men to not believe a word that they said. Easter was here. The first Easter. Jesus was alive. The world was completely turned upside down, and no one was celebrating. Didn't quite land right, did it? I mean, the women were, yes, amazed, but also terrified. Most of the disciples were just ignorant and doubtful. Peter and John were confused, and plenty of the rest just had no idea what was happening. It was Easter. It just didn't feel like it. Not yet. And we feel like that today. And here's part of our problem, I think. I was dwelling on this week. Here's part of our problem. I think we've been brought up on too many good stories. Now, whether you're the Wizard of Oz generation, or whether you're, let's say, the Godfather generation, or maybe like me, you're the Marvel generation, right? Whatever your age, we've all been brought up on good stories. And what's one common key of any good story? The climactic resolution. Right? Like when Dorothy and her friends, they discover the wizard and they each get what they need and they all go home. There you go. In The Godfather, there's a massacre on baptism day where it's all kind of resolved in one big scene. In Marvel, the Avengers, they actually eventually do assemble, right? Mark of any good story. In a single scene, there is cathartic resolution. We're just like, yes, there it is. All right. Got what I came for. And that's fine for stories. I love a good story. Our problem is that the resurrection isn't just a good story. It's history. The resurrection, it happened. It's truth. The resurrection is real life. And real life, I hate to tell you this, real life rarely brings that satisfying resolution in a single scene. That's not how life happens. Now, in every single gospel, the consequences of Jesus' resurrection, they are drawn out for days, even weeks. That's how real life goes. Few people experience joy right away in the gospel, and that's true for us too. And so this morning, Easter Sunday 2021, I want to invite you to experience Easter not just as a good story, but as real life. Which means I want to give you permission to not be super enthusiastic today. You can be if you are, that's great, but I want to give you permission to not have to be, or to at least have some things. Like, yes, it was great, but I'm going to give you permission to have a but at the end of that sentence. It's a good day, but I had to wear a mask. It was a good day, but there was distance. It was a good day, but it just didn't quite hit what I wanted. I'm going to give you permission for that. And in its place, I'm going to invite you to pick your character. You have four gospel stories of the resurrection. Pick your character. You can be one of the women. Amazed at the resurrection, yes, but also kind of scared, more than a little anxious at the world you live in. That's fine. Or you can be John and Peter, just so very confused and wanting to go home. Or you can be one of the other disciples, just kind of trying to live in denial and block out all the stuff you don't understand. That's fine. Pick your character. I hereby give you permission to not feel joyful on this Easter Sunday. What I won't give you permission to do, what I can't give you permission to do, is to let your feelings about Easter deny the reality of Easter. It may not feel like it. It may not have felt like it to them, but Easter is still the greatest day in all of history. Because here's the truth. However those people may have felt on that first Easter, Jesus was still alive regardless, right? Some didn't understand it, but their confusion did not take away Jesus' life. Some were terrified, but their terror did not put Jesus back in that tomb. Some denied it, but their denial did not put Jesus back on that cross. However people felt about it, Jesus was still raised. Jesus was still alive, and Jesus was victorious. That is where you say amen. It's the final answer to the question we have been asking for weeks. Why a cross? Why did Jesus die on a cross? And we've had a lot of answers. If you missed them, you can go back and listen. But today we get the final answer. Today we hear Luke and all the other gospel writers declare that Jesus died on a cross so that he could rise from the dead and in doing so, finally defeat death itself. And this year, and more, when we have experienced so much death, we may need this answer more than any other one. I mean, we live in a world now ravaged by death, gasping for air. We live in a time when mass shootings have now come back in the news for some reason. We live in a year when the numbers of the pandemic dead have now hit 550,000, and where the number of people suffering long-term effects of COVID are uncountable. On this Easter Sunday, that still doesn't feel exactly right, surrounded by people in a world that is shell-shocked and hurting alone, we need to hear today that death is not the final authority in our lives. And that is exactly what Easter declares. That is exactly what Jesus' resurrection declares. However you may feel today, Easter declares that Jesus is alive. And because Jesus is alive, death is finally vanquished and Christ stands victorious. Easter declares that while death still surrounds us, and it does, it cannot conquer us. Easter declares that Christ is alive and now our life is in him and our life is eternal like his. Christ is raised from the dead and now his resurrection is our resurrection and nothing can take that away from us. It's a good thing too. You felt it. I know you have at times, days, weeks, months. You've felt that hopelessness creep in. I know. And I've already said that Easter doesn't feel right, but that's just the latest on a long list of things. I know. I mean, despite all our efforts, the stress of navigating this last year, it has caused us pain and it has caused us to hurt each other. That's true. Our relationships are now frayed to the bone so much. Family doesn't feel like family. We haven't been able to see them. Friends don't feel like friends when we don't get to hang out with them the way we need to. This place does not feel like church some of the time. Preaching to a phone did not feel like church to me. You have yours. And I'll just tell you, as the pastor here, I've been around here long enough to know that all of that is on top of all the normal things that we struggle with. There are just things about us when there's not a global pandemic that make life hard sometimes. I mean, for one, this is, and I say this in love, one of the most opinionated groups of people I've ever met in my life. You get five of us together in a room and you're going to have 15 different opinions on whatever you're talking about. It's an amazing, we can even agree on, actually, I tried to think of something we all agree on and I couldn't do it, so just forget I said that. And we are also, in normal times, deeply flawed people as well. I mean, just this week, I had a conversation with someone that made me realize just how badly I'd messed something up just a couple weeks ago. And I had to call the person I'd hurt and beg their forgiveness. I hadn't realized what I'd done, but then it hit me how bad and hurtful it had been. Even your pastor lets you down sometimes. And that's true of everyone in this place. We are deeply flawed people in the best of times. I mean, we are not Instagram Christians, okay? I mean, no one's ever going to call us cool. We are never going viral around here. I gave up hopes about that a long time ago. We're more like the island of misfit toys around here. That's who we are. But you know what? You know what's incredible? Is what I've seen happen in this island of misfit toys in this just this last week. Just in a week, what I have seen. I mean, we started this week, some of you got to be here, with a social distance processional that should have done nothing more than make everyone feel awkward and stressed. That's the kind of idea that was. And yet, as we watched everyone come up here and wave to the people at home, as we saw the comments on Facebook, as we heard the testimonies, I mean, it made Arlene and I almost cry. It was so good. And then later in the week, downstairs on Wednesday, we served a meal to the hungry, just like we somehow managed to do every single week almost in the midst of a global pandemic. I don't know how that happens, but it does. In fact, our Monday Thursday virtual service, if you haven't seen it, it highlighted so many areas where we do that, where we feed people physically and spiritually. I don't know how any of that happens. It blew me away to talk about it. And then came Friday. And I have no idea how, but this incredible worship crew, who's been so incredibly faithful this year, they managed to roll with so many last-minute changes that their pastor threw on them. God love them. They're incredible. And then there was yesterday. Oh, there was yesterday. Yesterday started, I took my daughter, I ran to Penny Cooper's house, you know her, and she gave me some care packages and said, hey, take these to people, we just want people to feel loved. I was like, okay, I can do that. And I wasn't the only one to do it. It wound up sitting in Glenda Adams' home for an hour talking, but that's okay. That was a good hour spent talking with people who've been home for so long and being with them and watching my daughter play with their dolls like it was the best thing in the world. And then right after I picked up those care packages, I had the amazing privilege of seeing dozens of children, dozens of parents and grandparents show up at the Lackey family's backyard and have the time of their lives. That should not have happened. That should not have been possible. I mean, we do not have a children's pastor right now. We're working on it, but we don't have one. That kind of stuff shouldn't happen. But our amazing children's team, three people, worked together to plan the thing. And it was a ton of work, but you know what? Our youth showed up early to help those kids, and they stayed and hung out with those kids. And the kids loved it. I mean, and no one could tell who each other was. That's just the truth. Because A, there were a number of visitors who I'd never met before in my life. And B, there were people there I hadn't seen in a year, and we were all wearing masks. So you had no clue who the person in front of you was. It should not have happened. It should not have been possible. It should have been a disaster. But it was the most fun I'd had in a year. Oh, it was balm to my soul. You know why that could all happen? Do you know how a week like that could happen in this island of misfit toys? Do you know how? I can tell you how. I apologize, though. The best explanation for how is actually in Latin. Sorry. See, there's a concept in music called the cantus firmus. It means firm song. That's just the translation of it. And it refers to a tune around which all other music is arranged. The more sure and steady and constant the cantus firmus is, the more instruments can play with it. And the more diverse those instruments can be. If you have a good cantus firmus, if you have a good firm song holding everything together, you can have a whole diverse symphony playing along and it will still sound incredible. That's our secret. That's it. See, in Jesus' resurrection, his life has become the cantus firmus to all the rest of us. Jesus and his new life, that is the melody we harmonize around. It has become the one thing that can hold us all together. Nothing else can do that. It is because Jesus is so perfect and yet so accessible that each of us, even in these islands of misfit toys, can tune into his life and find that even we can be in harmony together. Kara talked about it. We lived it this week. And we should have never forgotten it. Even in a global pandemic, we should never have forgotten it. We Methodists in particular. I mean, we Methodists, we've known this better than most, if I may just be a little braggy a bit, if I may. I know all Christians love music. All people in the world love music. But it's always been a little extra special to us, if I just may say so. See, while we credit John Wesley for founding the Methodist movement that we're a part of here, John had a partner in crime in almost everything he did. His brother, Charles Wesley, the musician. Doesn't get enough credit, Charles Wesley. In fact, many of you have probably never heard his name before. But you know his work. I'm not going to sing it all. You're welcome. But Charles wrote things like, "Oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise." Charles Wesley wrote, "Come, thou long expected Jesus, born to set thy people free." He wrote, "Hark, the herald angels sing." There, I had to do that one. He wrote the one we started this service with, "Christ the Lord is risen today." That's how we started, with music, singing it together. At the heart of our tradition is this idea that when we let ourselves be bound together by Jesus and his new life, that we can bring together ourselves in all our diversity and all our diverse opinions and flaws and yet still manage to live in harmony. Singing together for us, it has always been our best symbol for what living in Christian community is really like. That community you heard Kara talk about in the children's moment. That community we feel when we come together, whether we're eating or talking or learning or worshiping, whatever it is. I mean, that's why this year's been hard. Because we haven't had so much of what we were used to. Especially when it comes to music. I mean, it's been hard, I know. I mean, often you've been singing at home alone. Some of you brave souls still do that. I love it. When you're here, you have to sing in those awful masks, though. Not much better, to be honest. Many of you I know just don't bother, and I don't blame you for it. It's not the same. No one can tell you're not anyway. And I mean, with the exception of these people in the front row, we've not even had a choir or a praise team for over a year. And it just feels wrong. So I thought we should fix it. Oh, it's still not safe to have a choir. No one's about to stand up and do a flash mob. But today, on this Easter Sunday, when we remember Jesus' resurrection, when we remember how his new life is the one thing that binds us together and lets us live in harmony, today is the day to bring our choir back. So we did.
Crown him with many crowns, the Lamb upon his throne. Hark how the heavenly anthem drowns a music but its own.